This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, and one of our favorite guests, Dan Moldea, joining us from the Beltway, the center of the universe, as Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has announced an agreement for a vote this morning to avoid a government shutdown. If passed as expected, the stopgap bill will keep the government running through December 3rd, averting a shutdown just hours before tonight's midnight deadline. Schumer says, "We're ready to move forward. We have an agreement on the CR, the continuing resolution to prevent a government shutdown, and we should be voting on that this morning." Now, we've had much jockeying going on, and the other matters regarding the president's agenda are still in flux, and the holdouts on the Democratic side are Senators Kyrsten Sinema, and that's Kyrsten, by the way, not Kristen, as I hear often on MSNBC. It's Kyrsten Sinema, Democrat from Arizona, first termer, and the veteran from West Virginia, Joe Manchin. And with us to analyze this, as he always provides insights that are enlightening, is Dan Moldea. Dan, what's going on in the Beltway?
The center of the universe. Jim, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And also, thank you for correcting it. Kristen, her name's Kristen, because I've
Kyrsten.
Been
it's Kyrsten. It's Kyrsten.
Kyrsten. Kyrsten. Kyrsten Sinema. Okay. She's the center of the universe right now, and she's not giving a she is irresponsibly not telling people what she's willing to do. And as a consequence, there's probably going to be the Pelosi the vote in the House today is probably going to be postponed because she doesn't know exactly where the Senate is coming from. Again, as you know, we have a 50-50 Senate. There's no room for error here. The Democrats must have every single vote. And of course, it's the vice president, the president pro tem of the Senate, who would break any 50-50 tie. And since it's a Democrat, it'll be with the Democrats. So that's their salvation. But they don't know where Manchin is right now. But Manchin's a little more, how shall I say, he explains his thoughts a little better, where she, the senator from Arizona, is not explaining her thoughts at all. So all the attention is going to be on her today to try to get her to say something that indicates what her position is, because she hasn't articulated it yet.
Well, Kyrsten Sinema is a fascinating person. She's 45 years old, first-term U.S. senator, was a congresswoman from Arizona's 9th District, B.A. Brigham Young University, J.D. Arizona State University. She, Ph.D., by the way, Arizona State University, extremely well-educated. She was a Mormon, now identifies herself as non-theist and is openly bisexual. And she is a fascinating individual, but is not doing any interviews. And they caught her yesterday and asked her where she stood on this. And she said, "I'm standing right by the elevator. Can't you see?" So
I'm in the Senate, she said. I'm in the Senate. That's where I am. And then they said, "Well, where are you standing?" And he goes, "I'm getting ready to go onto the elevator," or whatever you correctly said. It's a weird situation. But you know, they've had these moments. Apparently, there's going to be the continuing resolution, as you noted. But you know, they have these things every single year, and they, dozens of times over the past few decades. And you know, they always work it out sooner or later. Although there was the 35-day shutdown some years ago, which really hurt a lot of people and hurt the economy and everything else. And so, I believe things are going to work out. I'm one of those pain in the ass people, always looking for the bright side of things. But I believe this is ultimately going to work out. But I don't know what's going to happen to the two bills that the progressives want considered at the same time, you know, the infrastructure and then the infrastructure plus. I think that those are which are the sum total of Biden's economic agenda. And that seems to be at risk right now, which is why Biden canceled his trip to Chicago and is en route to Capitol Hill to try to do some schmoozing up there. And so, you know, I have a lot of faith in Joe Biden, and he is, you know, he spent his entire career either as a United States senator or as vice president of the United States and now president. And, you know, I think he's capable of leading us out of this mess that we're in right now. At least I hope he is.
877-217-5757. And I do want to remind you that we have a new phone system, but I've been informed by Gage Telephone, the provider, that it is not Gage's fault that there's been a hacking incident that is affecting lines all over the country. And as I surmised yesterday, it might very well be Vladimir Putin at work here, but sometimes we get gremlins in the phone lines, and this time we may have the Kremlin in the phone line. But if we can't get you on, we'll live to fight another day. But we've got the fascinating Dan Moldea, who can hear me and is talking, and we always look for his insights. Now, the New York Times is suddenly zoning in on Kyrsten Sinema, and if her method to this was to receive attention, she's certainly doing that. Here's the story, though, that is not all that flattering, but it does provide some insight. Jade Duran once spent her weekends knocking on doors to campaign for Senator Kyrsten Sinema, the stubbornly centrist Democrat whose vote could seal the fate of a vast Democratic effort to remake America's social safety net, but no more. When Ms. Sinema famously gave a thumbs down to a $15 minimum wage and refused to eliminate the filibuster to pass new voting rights laws this year, Duran, a Democrat and biomedical engineer from Phoenix, decided she was fed up. She joined dozens of liberal voters and civil rights activists in a rolling series of protests outside Senator Sinema's Phoenix offices, which have been taking place since the summer, and nearly 50 people have been arrested. Sinema, a one-time school social worker and Green Party-aligned activist, vaulted through the ranks of Arizona politics by running as a zealous bipartisan, willing to break with her fellow Democrats. She counts Senator John McCain, who died in 2018, as her hero. And isn't this ironic that McCain saved the Affordable Care Act and Sinema may kill Joe Biden's agenda? And they're both from the great state of Arizona, and I think it was Sinema who succeeded McCain.
Also, it's interesting that she also was a big Nader supporter, too, I think in 2000. And we know the havoc that was reached during that 2000 election because of the Nader factor in that, where, you know, we had a disputed election between, of course, Al Gore and George Bush. So, you know, she is a puzzle. But again, Joe Manchin is equally controversial. But Joe Manchin is out there talking. He's out there explaining things. Now, he hasn't given his bottom line either, but I'm sure he will today. I mean, he's an adult, and I think that this senator from Arizona is not acting like an adult. I think she's acting very irresponsibly, and I think that her cavalier comments that you noted about at the elevator, I think don't bode well for her. And And unfortunately, the world has stopped here in Washington until she figures out what she's going to do. I think Manchin and NDN is going to do the right thing. But her, I don't know what her game is. I don't know what she is, what she's about. I know Dick Durbin, the number two guy in the Senate, among Senate Democrats, he's a really nice guy. And he's got a nice word to say about everybody, even Republicans. And he's very frustrated by her bad behavior through this whole thing, and he's been fairly unbridled about expressing it. I mean, what does she stand for? What does she want? And please say something to explain your opinion, your position. She's not doing it.
No, she's not telling them what she would take as a compromise, and she is in a position to be a leader on that front. But at this point, she is a key vote, the key vote, and Democrats probably, I don't think there's any doubt, wish they had 51 senators rather than 50, but that's not the case. And they only got 50 because two Democrats won in Georgia who were not anticipated to win, Ossoff and Warnock, and so it's 50-50. And in the South, by the way, in the SEC, of the 22 U.S. senators who represent the 11 SEC states, only two are Democrats, and those are the two in Georgia. And so the South is the Trump base, and Donald John Trump doesn't want this to pass. He doesn't want a victory for Joe Biden. And how much of a factor is he in all of this?
Unfortunately, Trump's base continues to determine the the positions of people in the House and the Senate. He still has tremendous power. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I have friends who here in Washington. Of course, you have friends who are of both parties, and here in Washington, I've had friends who are even not only Republicans but Trump supporters. I never quite got it, but they are. And I get it. Okay, I guess I do understand that. But after his bad behavior in the aftermath of the November election, and especially after the January 6th insurrection, which he precipitated, I don't just question my friends who are Trump supporters these days still. And I don't question their personal politics. I question their basic sense of right and wrong at this point.
877-217-5757. If you call in, we'll try to get you in, but you can always reach us by sending emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. We'll hear more from Dan Moldea in the next segment, back after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. And as mentioned, our phone lines, it's a nationwide phenomenon, according to Gage Telephone, of phone lines in various parts of our country being hacked, and that has included us. But we have been able to get some of you through, and quite pleasantly, we've been able to have guests on the line like Dan Moldea, who's with us for another segment. Send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Today, another story, above the fold, New York Times, Democrats prepared legislation yesterday to avert a government shutdown, but they were desperately trying to salvage President Biden's domestic agenda as conservative-leaning holdouts dug in against an ambitious $3.5 trillion social safety net and climate bill that carries many of the party's top priorities. Congressional leaders moved to address the most immediate threat, working to complete a bill to prevent government funding to stop at midnight. But yet, after days of intense negotiations to bridge bitter differences in their party over President Biden's two biggest legislative priorities, the president and top Democrats appeared as far as ever from an agreement on their marquee social policy package, which the White House calls Build Back Better Plan. Now, even in the great state of West Virginia, and Dan, you were talking about Joe Manchin, he has much more to risk than does Kyrsten Sinema. After all, Biden won Arizona, Sinema state, and Trump won in West Virginia with about 80% of the votes. So, but even in West Virginia, when you poll people about what is in the plan, they like the plan, but they just don't like the fact that it's a Democratic plan with Joe right. Biden's name on it.
My position is that Joe Biden is going to be a one-term president. He is, and not because he's going to be defeated in 2024, but because he's not going to run in 2024. And we have this opportunity to take a guy with all of this experience who's not going to run again. The whole cast of characters on the Republicans and the Democrats will be new coming into 2024. But you've got a guy who really knows the government and how it operates, who is willing to do what is necessary, whether it's with the vaccines or the COVID generally or the infrastructure, which all of us know must be passed. And here you have a situation where just get behind this guy. Let him fix all these problems that need to be fixed. And then we can go back to killing each other in 2024. But right now you've got a guy who understands the government, understands that how it works as President of the United States. And he's always operated in a bipartisan manner. He's a centrist. I believe that you run from the center and you govern from the center. That's the best way to have peace in government is to, unless you got the votes. If you got the votes, if you have the overwhelming, if you got the 60 plus votes in the Senate, then you could pretty much do whatever you want. But have the progressive agenda that needs to be done. But the progressives right now, I think, are 50 to 60 votes right now, but they could bring this whole thing to a halt. And apparently they're going down to the mat on this, where they are not going to consider anything that isn't considered together, whether the two pieces of legislation are considered together, because they're afraid that the moderates, or at least the conservatives, will will consider one package, but not the big $3.5 trillion package that they're interested in regarding climate change and child services and everything else. You know, the traditional liberal agenda. But again, you've got a bare minimum difference between Republicans and Democrats in the House, and you have no margin for error, 50-50 in the Senate. Are you going to be able to pull this off? And right now, if the progressives keep their position, I see this not working. But the fact is, the greatest warrior in Washington is Nancy Pelosi. There is nobody better than Nancy Pelosi at making deals and bringing things together. To me, she saved the world several times. The first of which was the economic disaster in 2008, when she pulled the Democrats together to get behind the bailout for the banks, and she did it again during the Trump administration with her good judgment and her fighting ways.
877-217-5757. Doug on Nicholson, let's give it a shot. Doug, you're on the air with Dan Moldea. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Mr. Moldea always brings up so many great things, and based on what he just said, I wanted to point out that Nancy Pelosi was also instrumental in getting help for Louisiana after Katrina, when not everybody in Congress wanted to do that. Also wanted to point out that I think he's hit on another piece of the picture here, so a lot of these, or some of these folks in Congress are new, and they've locked themselves into positions based on what they want, and they don't understand that what they want is not the most important thing. It's getting good results for the American people. So I hope they can pull it all together, because the alternative, of course, is not going to be good for the American people.
Thank you, Doug. Good to hear from you. Dan, your thoughts.
Is he still on the line?
He's gone.
I was going to say, we've been through this before. All of us have seen this before. We've seen all this high drama before, where at the 11th hour, you know, the government's going to close and everything. As I said, it was at one time it went down for 35 days, and what a disaster that was. And the Republicans really took it on the chin on that one, and rightfully so. I mean, that is a now familiar tactic that Republicans will do, is to bring this thing to the brink. You know, to not raise the debt limit, which is the big issue coming up, I think, on October 15th. And again, this is like for money spent. This is like money's been put on a credit card, which has already been spent, which has already been voted on and spent. And now they're saying we don't want to pay for it. And they're going to try to lay this on the Democrats and put it on them, because in their eternal desperation to try to win back the House and the Senate in the 2022 midterm elections. And so, you know, and again, it goes back to your point about Trump, Jim, because, you know, Trump doesn't want Biden to have any victories at all, because he's afraid that's going to do something to diminish their chances to win back the House and the Senate next year.
Donald John Trump, who you say Biden's not running for president. Do you think Trump will run in 2024?
From what I'm hearing, you know, and I'm just reading and watching, as like everybody else is, it would appear as though he is. And I think that on one hand, that's good, because he's such a lightning rod, and I think he'll really get slaughtered. I think if he were to run for reelection, I think he would get slaughtered in that. I wonder if he would even win the primary. But what concerns me is what's coming up. Is it going to be some creep like Tom Cotton, or is it going to be that like that Hawley guy? Is it going to be? I got to tell you, one of the guys who's really impressed me is your senator. You know, where he voted for impeachment.
Cassidy.
Yeah.
Cassidy, who has no shot at all of getting a Republican nomination, though.
No, I'm just saying, I never was a fan of that guy. I didn't like him. I thought he was just another knuckle-dragging Republican. But he has shown some independence.
I do have a statement sent from Donald John Trump just a few moments ago. I am on his email list, and he says, Jim, if Democrats are able to piece together their huge tax hikes called by another name, it will mean an additional 40 Republican seats in the House and at least a few additional Republican senators in the U.S. Senate. That's from Donald John Trump, who wants to stop Joe Biden at all costs. William in Opelousas. William, please be brief. You're on with Dan. Hi, William.
Hey, Jim, and hi to you, get. The thing with me, Jim, is we spent $2.5 trillion in Afghanistan, and Manchin says $3.5 trillion is too much to spend in the United States over 10 years.
All right. What about money that was not well spent on wars that were not won by the United States, Iraq, Afghanistan, pick your war?
I think the caller's right. I think the caller's right. And, you know, Afghanistan's a whole different problem. And, you know, again, Biden is really taking it on the chin over that. You know, you had the president leaving the country in the middle of the night, like Art Modell bringing the Cleveland Browns to Baltimore. You had this unbelievable situation where the military, the official military of Afghanistan, laid down their arms and basically surrendered to the Taliban.
877-217-5757 for Dan Moldea. We'll spend a few more minutes with him, and then we'll hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate. We're back after this brief pause with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. A few more minutes with Dan Moldea on Talk Louisiana, the intrepid reporter, author of many books that are bestsellers on various topics, from Jimmy Hoffa to the NFL to O.J. Simpson. He's covered the beat for a long, long time, more than 40 years. He's been in the Beltway almost 50 years now, I guess, Dan. Even though you're still a young man, at least you're younger.
Young man, yes.
Younger than the president and the Speaker of the House and the former president, and still a vigorous, vigorous guy who, in addition to being a great reporter, is also a licensed private investigator. And those two are not inconsistent. I like the fact that you know what you're doing when you're unearthing these nuggets of information, such as you found on former Senator David Bruce Vitter.
Right. Well, the being the registered private investigator gives me access to databases and things like that that I wouldn't have as, let's say, a civilian. So it's good to be a private investigator and to have access to that inside information that private investigators, these gumshoes who work so hard, have access to. So it's been interesting, to say the least.
Well, I had mentioned in our lead-in today that we would talk briefly about Stephanie Grisham's book. She was the last press secretary for Donald Trump. Never had a press conference, but she's written a book, and it is perhaps the most scathing, and it's from an insider. She was there, and she...
Very controversial. I haven't heard a lot about that, but it's, I've been hearing a lot about it, but I haven't been like focusing on it, but it is a, let's face it. They called Ronald Reagan the Teflon president. There is no one more Teflon than Donald Trump. There, you know, no matter what you throw, I never thought he was going to survive the Mueller investigation. And not only did he survive it, but he prospered from it. What he did not survive was, in my opinion, the moment that Bob Woodward recorded Trump on February 7th, 2020, and Trump said during this interview that he was aware that the COVID pandemic was airborne, and he decided not to alarm the public by saying that. That cost us a much. I think it was that Woodward interview that put the COVID at center stage during the 2020 election, and I think that's what cost him the election. His total irresponsibility, Trump's total irresponsibility in handling this pandemic from the outset.
All right, I'll read just a bit from the New York Times account of Ms. Grisham's book, Stephanie Grisham, last press secretary to President Trump when he was in office, who quit on January 6th. She confirms what she and Melania Trump had long denied, that the First Lady was angry after several reports of her husband's infidelities and hush money payments surfaced in the media. After the Stormy Daniels story broke and all the allegations that followed from other women, Grisham writes, I felt that Mrs. Trump was unleashed. The First Lady found ways to omit her husband from photos and tweets, made it a point to show up on the arm of a handsome military aide. Melania Trump, who is closed off to even her closest aides, begins to open up to Ms. Grisham, telling her what she doesn't believe about her husband's denials, and from those of Michael Cohen, who of course ultimately changed his tune, the attorney for the president. And Dan, just to show you how pedestrian this president was, Ms. Grisham writes that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, called her while aboard Air Force One to defend the size of his penis. So this guy, he was a piece of work.
He was a piece of work. No answer. And he continues to be a piece of work. And again, I can get people, I understand people who supported Donald Trump. But after his bad behavior, his refusal to concede the election, the big lie about that he had won the election, which had been stolen from him, when all the evidence is against that. And then finally, the insurrection on January 6th. I don't know how any American who could support Donald Trump after the problems that he's caused in this country after that January 6th treason. They're working hard up on Capitol Hill to investigate it. But I fear that once again, this guy will somehow wiggle through the ropes and survive that as well.
Teflon Don. Thank you, Dan.
Teflon Don. Always a pleasure, Jim.
Great to visit with you.
Thank you, sir.
Mark Ballard of The Advocate is with us, and Mark has been out and about covering all various kinds of matters, including what's going on in Washington. And we will start there since we're finishing up with Dan Moldea. The headline on page 3 of The Advocate, and the story written by the Capitol Bureau editor, Mark Ballard: Cassidy optimistic on aid package. Now, he may be optimistic, Mark, but will he vote for it?
Well, they're two different bills, and he is going to vote for it because it's he says that they've come to an agreement where they remove the debt limit from the bill, and so that it would keep the government running, which it's supposed to close down at 12:01 tonight, and it would also include disaster aid for Laura, Delta, and Zeta. I get them confused. And then there's a separate measure that would give disaster aid for Hurricane Laura. And he said he would vote for it because it did not have the debt limit.
I'm not sure Senator Kennedy will, though.
Actually, I think that he will. That would be my guess.
Well,
you know, when they voted on it earlier this week, they waited until it was absolutely dead, and then they were the last two votes that were cast when it was clear that it wasn't going to pass.
Kennedy did send out a press release this morning. It says Senator John Kennedy has joined Senator Mitt Romney and 30 other senators in writing to Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Senate Finance Committee Chair Ron Wyden, opposing a measure of the multi-trillion-dollar Democrat spending bill that would raise taxes on married couples. The policy would effectively discourage marriage. That's Kennedy's take on it. And he never misses a chance to try to pulverize the other side, a side that he was on not so long ago, Mark Ballard.
Well, this is true. This is true. But they need 60 votes for it to pass and for the government to keep on going. And Senator Cassidy seems to think that they have those 60 votes.
Well, so that's because of the filibuster. And so they need 10 Republicans to join 50 Democrats. And Democrats on some of these measures, as we just heard, aren't even sure they're going to get all 50 of the Democrats. And they have to get all 50, it would seem, on the big stuff. And that's...
But I think there are two different things here. In the House, they're going to be voting on the infrastructure bill, and that's where they're having problems with all the Democrats. And the Republican leadership is against it as well.
Well, in the House, the progressives don't want to split the baby. They don't want to pass anything without passing everything. And so Nancy Pelosi has problems on the left in the House, and Chuck Schumer has problems on the right in the Senate. Two members in particular, Manchin and Sinema. And it's politics. It's the way things are. But in the end, do you think it'll all be resolved and we'll move merrily along and Biden will have his victory, or will this be a crushing defeat for the 46th president?
Well, I'm inclined to agree with Senator Cassidy in that they're going to vote on it without the debt limit being attached to that bill, the reconciliation bill, so that we'll keep the government open until early December. And that's my gut feel. But then tomorrow I could be waking up to federal government being shut down,
well,
too.
I think the government will stay open. And one of the reasons is that these senators and House members would lose their paychecks. We wouldn't want that to happen, Mark. That'd be awful. That'd be terrible. Couldn't happen.
Well, I also think that the metrics look bad, and so they. I don't think Biden wants to have the government shut down.
It has happened with Clinton and Gingrich, and of course, Clinton won the PR battle and ended up winning re-election to the presidency in 1996. So. Everything has a political component now, and quite often that takes precedent over what the ramifications are for the people at large, but that's politics.
Well, that's true.
Okay, well, a few matters locally that we want to converse with Mark about, and if you'd like to get in, 877-217-5757. Front page story today from Will Sintel. In a major change, public school students will be allowed to remain in classrooms even if they have close contact with someone who tests positive for the coronavirus. That's from State Superintendent Cade Brumley. State Education Department is providing local school systems an option to change its COVID quarantine policy. Superintendent of Education Brumley says instead of a mandatory quarantine for students defined as close contact, school systems can now allow parents to decide if their child should stay at home if their son or daughter was in close contact with someone with COVID. Here's Cade Brumley.
Face too many students multiple times being out of school over the last 2 years for quarantining. And there are consequences to that, from academic consequences to well-being consequences to just being away from their friends.
And Brumley adds that students who are quarantined for possible COVID exposure will receive a free virus screening, saying that engaging the parents and their child's well-being is good policy.
We think it's a common sense approach as we move forward, and it's an option that school systems can consider.
All right, so this one is a hot potato. Governor Edwards favors the quarantine guidelines. Cade Brumley's adjusting him.
It is a hot potato. The governor and Dr. Cantor both say that it's a bad, bad idea. And a number of the BSEE board members did not know what Mr. Brumley was fixing to do. And so I have a feeling that we're going to be hearing about this quite a bit over the next week or so.
And it's not the first time that an education superintendent has been at odds with the governor. Edwards didn't like the previous one, John White. John White at first was liked by Bobby Jindal and then disliked by him. So now we've got Cade Brumley and the governor on opposite sides, and we'll return with more from Mark Ballard. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us. Alondra Villarreal is producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Mark Ballard, as is our Thursday custom, is joining us to converse about matters near and far. 877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org. Bill Huey sends an email saying an S&P analyst is quoted in today's Advocate saying the second downgrade, we're talking about Entergy, downgrade as far as the financial viability for the juggernaut in Louisiana was in reaction to the threat to walk away from Entergy New Orleans if the city council decided to seek independence for the municipal utility. Huey continues, so Entergy shot themselves in the foot on Wall Street with this veiled threat. Bumblers, he continues, most of them couldn't run a C-store with two gas pumps. That from Bill Huey's fired up about Entergy. We don't have many big companies in Louisiana. We have fewer than the great state of Arkansas, actually many fewer, unfortunately, and yet we're a much bigger state. So, Mark, it would be a blow to lose Entergy.
Well, it would be, and I'm not sure that that's going to happen. That would be a huge undertaking for the power company, for the utility company, which is the only Fortune 500 corporation that we have headquartered in Louisiana. So I think what they're aiming, what they were threatening the city council with was to merge Entergy New Orleans with Entergy Louisiana, which would put the PSC as the regulatory head of the New Orleans area, or the New Orleans, city of New Orleans, instead of the city council. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's going anywhere, but that was what the threat was.
Well, Entergy Tower is located at 639 Loyal Avenue, Central Business District, New Orleans, 28 stories, 360 feet tall. Building was once used to have the Consulate General of Japan in New Orleans, but Entergy right now is making some waves about possibly moving, and that would not be good for our state. 877-217-5757. A few days ago, I was reading about Atlanta and its murder problem, and Atlanta, which is a city immensely larger than Baton Rouge, in 2019, 2 years ago, had 99 murders. 99 in the city of Atlanta. We just topped 100 murders for this year in Baton Rouge, Mark. This is another front page story from Leah Skeen, and it is a trend that is nationwide. No doubt COVID has contributed, but still, 100 murders in a city this size is perplexing, if not alarming.
It is alarming, and it is a trend nationwide. I mean, Memphis also has had a high rate of murders as well. And I'm not sure, is it just the COVID? Is it just having people at home all the time? Or was it people being unable to work and needing extra money? I don't know what the answer is to that, but it does seem to be coming as we are coming out of the pandemic.
And a listener notes, this is Holly in the Garden District, that today I saw it, the editorial page, which Mark does not write, has what amounts to a vote of confidence for Chief Murphy Paul, saying that he is representing Louisiana well. And he is a guy who has taken a lot of heat externally and internally. The union, police union, doesn't like him. That's apparent. And he's hanging in there, but it's a tough job.
It is. I can't imagine being in a job like that where you're kind of attacked on both sides, and to where everything you do is criticized. And so, but I think that this is also something that's going on around the country as well. The police chiefs in cities around the country are being attacked pretty much the same way.
Another listener asks about this story, and I found it from yesterday, another front page story, this one from Andrea Gallo. LSU police don't have sexual assault agreement, LSU, police. And the legislature passed a law requiring one. I think they have until January 1, but it doesn't appear that they're really in full bloom trying to make this happen, Mark.
Yeah, I got that feeling, too. As I read it and listened to part of that that hearing, was that they hadn't really leaned into it yet, but they do have a few more months on it. And it would seem that would have been one of the first things that they would do. And I don't understand the reasoning behind it, but I believe that it has more to do with turf than anything else.
Another listener notes that an LSU attorney, I think the primary one, Winston DeQueer, I see him at board meetings. He said a few months ago, more than a few now, that when Gloria Scott testified before the legislative committee investigating LSU, she testified that she was sexually harassed in most crude of ways by Darius Geis, and Coach O is accused of knowing about this and covering for Geis, and she said that Coach O was actually on the phone with her. Orgeron denied it, and Winston DeQueer said, if he's lying, we'll take care of him. Well, 3-4 months later, I don't know what's happened. Have they really tried to find out if Coach O was lying or telling the truth?
Well, all of that kind of stuff is done behind closed doors. I mean, transparency is not the watchword at LSU, never has been. And so we don't know what they've actually done and looked at it. I imagine that her attorney is doing everything he can to to try to figure out if he actually spoke on that. But so far, we don't know. And they're not being forthcoming about this.
There were numerous allegations and revelations about Les Miles that were pushed aside, and he did not get fired until he lost to Auburn in 2016 in the fourth game. That made LSU 2-2. LSU plays Auburn this week. They're four-point favorites. And Coach O, despite all this noise around him, Mark, I think it's safe to say if he loses his job, it quite likely will be because they lose too many football games, not because he's implicated in any kind of wrongdoing regarding his handling of Darius Geis or Drake Davis or other misconduct by his players.
I think you're right. I think that at least that part of the LSU culture has not really changed, and that when it comes down to it, it's going to be because he lost too many games rather than behavior or lack of action on his part dealing with the sexual harassment scandal.
A listener, this is a good question from a listener who's obviously a fan of Mark's. This is Maria. Maria says she's from Ascension Parish, saying, how do you stay well-versed on so many topics, Mark? You're not a guy who has a particular beat. Every beat is yours when it comes to what's happening in the community and in the state. How do you stay abreast of what's going on with your busy life?
Well, that sounds like a T-ball question. I read the newspaper. I read the newspaper a lot, as I suggest everybody do, to kind of keep up with it. Also, being in the state capitol, you hear a whole lot of information that does not necessarily have to deal with legislature or state government, because in our state, the state government has a good deal of power, and in local areas as well. So what they do tends to extend out. And
all right.
So I guess that's it. But read the newspaper.
Well, I'll say this for Mark. When he comes on this show, there are no ground rules, but they're guests, and generally I don't comply. I hate it when people come in here so prepared that they're reading from a script. That's not a conversation. Mark just rolls with the flow. He never knows what we're going to ask him, and that's the way it should be. And you've got a chance to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757, or talk@talklouisiana.org. Karen Merrifield says, we're not coming out of the pandemic. Fourth surge just ended, and our numbers are still higher than the beginning of the pandemic. And the governor has extended the mask mandate. And Mark, we're far from the finish line on this.
Yeah, this is true. I guess that's fair then in a broad brush. But yes, we're going to have to wear masks, the mandates, for the next 4 weeks. And it's, though the numbers are going down, they're still extremely high. And so, I mean, we're still in the pandemic.
Yes, we are.
This is true.
And this
But it's getting better. That's the one thing we can say.
Let's hope we don't get another variant.
But let's hope that a lot of these people that have not been vaccinated go out and do so.
Yeah.
That seems to be where the real issue is the folks that have not been vaccinated.
We talked a bit about this with John Cuvion yesterday, but there's a Kaiser Foundation poll that shows that 90% of Democrats have been vaccinated in the country and 58% of Republicans. I don't know how this evolved into a partisan issue. And by the way, President Trump deserves credit for going out and pushing for a vaccine, and he got vaccinated, even though he had COVID. But yet many Republicans don't want to get it. And you got to think it may be because of some people on places like Fox News who are saying everything they can to either downplay or discredit the vaccine, Mark.
It does seem like it's become a partisan issue, even though we have those vaccines because of what President Trump did. But I wonder, had he won, whether the Democrats would be the ones not getting vaccinated. I don't know that, but it has become a partisan issue. It has become an issue that's where they're rallying around these ideas of freedom, you know, that I can choose myself whether to be vaccinated.
Mark, let's do it again next week. Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. For Alondra Villarreal, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.